Morning. Today's daf in Baba Basra is Mem Hei. We are starting today in the middle of Mem Dalet Amud Beis. We are starting with the words Velechush. Lechush is right in the middle of the Amud. Velechush Dilma Deikne is where we're beginning, but we're in the middle of a sentence, so let's just quickly recap what we saw yesterday and get us ready to continue for today. There's a brisa that was recorded on Mem Gimel Amud Beis, and the brisa talked about the sale of a house or the sale of a field, basically a sale of property. So now the seller can no longer testify about that property. He has a vested interest in that property even after he sold it. What's his vested interest? So as we explained yesterday, and as we're going to explain again today, his idea is going to be repeated a couple of times, is that he has a vested interest because in the event that he has a creditor and he has an outstanding loan and he defaulted on the loan, so he wants his creditor to come and seize the property as a satisfaction of his loan. Why? So the Pasuk in Tehillim says, and we're going to quote it again later on as well, that when you are a lover, Rasha, lo yishalim. That you know what bad borrowers do? Bad borrowers don't pay their loan. And the truth of the matter is, the Pasuk in Tehillim says, you're Rasha. I mean, that's strong language. You do not want to be put into that category. So, yeah, you had a property and there was a lien on the property, so you want your creditor to exercise that lien and to take the property. So you have a vested interest in that property even after you sold it. So therefore, you can't testify about that property. And in fact, that's what the Braisa said. Because you have a chayus. And although the Gemara yesterday spent a lot of time giving one pshat in the Braisa, and that was Rav Sheshes, but we are now in the second pshat of the Braisa, which is that a chayus over here means that this loan is going to be serving as the satisfaction of the lien. So machlo par, machlo talis. However, the Braisa went on to say that if you sold either a cow or an article of clothing, so then you could testify about it, because once you sold it, you have no longer have a vested interest in the item, meaning the item is not going to help you at all, and there's no lien attached to the movable item, and because there's no lien attached to the movable item, so therefore it's not going to benefit you, it's not going to take away from you. In other words, someone's coming along and challenging the legitimacy of that person owning the item, you can now testify together with another person and you could say, no, the item really belonged to me and I really sold it to that person. And because there's no gain. So basically the idea that we said yesterday is that when you're nogea bedavar, if you have a vested interest in something, you can't testify about it. If you're not nogea bedavar, you can. And in the course of this discussion, we're also learning together that there is no lien attached to movable items. Now, as we pointed out in yesterday's daf, if a creditor is coming after you and you have no money and you have movables on your possession, so obviously he'll come and he'll take the movable items that are on your possession. But once you sell those items, there's no lien attached to those items, and therefore those items are no longer there to serve as satisfaction of your loan. Furthermore, we also pointed out yesterday, even if you dedicated an article, a movable item as an apotiki, so you say to the creditor, here, let me borrow the money, and let's establish that my cow or whatever, any movable item you have is an apotiki, so that apotiki, an apotiki is a specific lien where I'm earmarking the item that's going to be used in terms of satisfaction of the loan, and then you go ahead and you sell the item. So we learned yesterday that the item is no longer has a lien attached to it, meaning the sale of the item is going to break the apotiki. And so on movable items, there simply is no lien attached. Adkan, that's basically what we said yesterday. Here's also what we learned yesterday, which is fascinating and really a really tremendous chiddush. Even though there's a lien attached to property and there's no lien attached to movables, but what if I make a sale of movables in conjunction with property, what we call kinyan agav? The Gemara in Kiddushin describes, it's one of the methods of kinyanim, where if I buy property and in conjunction with the property, I'm also buying movables as well. So agav, basically by dint of the fact that I acquired the property, I'm also going to be acquiring the movables as well. And what we learned yesterday is that in such a situation, there will be a lien attached to the movables. Basically, when you make a kinyan agav, the movables basically take on the shape of the property. Since there's a lien on property, there's also going to be a lien on movables as well. I suppose, meaning the Gemara doesn't really articulate this well, but I suppose the rationale behind that is that, look, every sale of property is public. Meaning the idea behind the fact that there's a lien on a property is that the sale goes public. It's on public record. There are going to be witnesses who are attesting to the sale. So once movables go into that, so the movables also become public as well. I guess that's the basic idea. Anyway, so the Gemara says, so there is a method in which there can be a lien on movables, and that is when the movables are sold through Kinyan Agav. Now, if that's true, and the Gemara does not flinch from that position, so if that's true, so then basically we're back to asking the question once again. Well, once you're selling the property and the movables, so now there is a way for movables to have a lien on them. So now, when the Braisa says, you know, once you sell a cow, once you sell a cow, you are allowed to testify about it because you don't have a vested interest. Now what the Gemara is re-asking is, well, you may have a vested interest because the sale of that cow might have been done through Kinyan Agav, and if the sale of that cow was done through Kinyan Agav, so now there is a lien on that cow. Now I do have a vested interest in that cow because along comes a creditor and I want to satisfy my loan, and that cow could serve as a method of me satisfying my loan. So what the Gemara basically, and this is where we got to yesterday, what the Gemara now is re-asking is, there is a possibility for you to have a vested interest. So I'll tell you what, let's start a little bit above where we...
No, how did he have a vested interest? He has to repay the guy for the land, right?
The Gemara is going to ask the Gemara is going to ask that question.
Same way, you know, pay him.
So the Gemara is going to ask that question, and you'll see. It's a very good question. That's coming up. So the Gemara says... I'm going to start a little bit above Valechush, meaning we're really up to Valechush in the middle of the Amud. Mm-hmm. But I'm just backing up a little bit. It's about a dozen lines from the top of the Amud. The first word in the line is Leikala, Vahalef Leikala, Valechush. Here's where we're beginning this morning. The Gemara says, let's have the following concern. Dilma Akne Le Metat Le Agav Mekarke. So let's be concerned about a Kinyan Agav, like I just got done explaining. The Amar Rabbi Yakne Le Metat Le Agav Mekarke. Rabbi teaches us that if I make a Kinyan Agav, movables together with property, kind of mikarke, kind of metaltele. So there was an acquisition of the property, and there was an acquisition of the movables. And as we explained yesterday, that means not that you acquire both, but there's a lien attached to both. Meaning, just like there's a lien on the property, there's also going to be a lien on the movables as well. And that only begs the question. So now we find we can have a scenario in which there's going to be a lien on movables. So the Gemara says, "Vamarev chisav u'dekasav la delo kasmachta u'delo ketufsa d'shtare." The Gemara says, "Oh, by the way, parenthetically, when you are making a contract for such a sale, it has to be where the contract was written as a genuine contract. You write in the actual shtar itself. This is not a smachta. This is not a contingency. It's not kutufse shtare. This is not a draft document where basically other documents are going to be copied from this document. Meaning this is a bona fide document." Okay, you heard this language before when you hear the ksuva being read at the chasna. So you hear dolokas machta loketufse di shtare. This is the formatted language of all documents. So the Gemara says hachav ma'iskinan. So the Gemara says fine. So what are we dealing with over here? Kegon shalaka chumaka umachar la'altar. So the Gemara says that what happened was is that he bought it and sold it immediately, meaning that we know that this was not done through the sale of Kinyan Agav. So the Gemara says, "Valeichush dilma diikne hu." So the Gemara says, "Well, let's concern ourselves with the following. Maybe this person, again, this person is both a seller and he's a borrower. Remember, he's got this. He's got two financial situations going on. One is that he owes somebody money, and two is that he has items and he's selling the items. And we're worried about the conjunction of these two relationships because the item that he sold is going to be able to use that satisfaction for the loan. And which means again, he's no gevedavar. The Gemara now wonders as follows: maybe he borrowed money." And then after he borrowed money, then he came on to movable items. He bought a movable item. And maybe what he said to the lenders as follows. Not only am I going to have all my current assets mortgaged against the loan, but any future assets that I will buy are also going to be mortgaged against the loan as well. So basically what he is contracting is that he will... He will mortgage all current and future holdings against the loan. So the Gemara says, Shmami nadi ikne kano macher kano vaharish lo mishabe. So the Gemara says, now, by virtue of the fact that we're not even entertaining this, you know what it must mean? It must mean that it's just simply ineffective. Meaning that if I make the claim that I'm going to mortgage not only my current holdings, but my future holdings against a loan, it must be that it just simply doesn't take. Meaning if I buy an item after the origination of the loan, and then I sell it after the origination of the loan, so, and I'm not talking about just movables, we're talking about even property as well, it simply doesn't take. Or the Gemara says, so let's say I get a property after the origination of the loan, and then I bequeath it to my child, that property will not be mortgaged against the loan. So the Gemara says, it must be that that's so. So the Gemara says, Lo tzricha dekamri edim yadinam bay b'hai delo havalei ara me'olam. So the Gemara says, well, you don't have to say that. Meaning, not that that point is incorrect, but you don't have to say that. Another possibility is, in terms of why we're not worried about he had any land at the loan, why he didn't have any land after the origination of the loan, it could simply very well be that, and I say simply, by the way, it's not that simple, but it could simply be that maybe witnesses saw that he never acquired land after the origination of the loan. Now, I'm admitting, by the way, that that's really difficult. Meaning, what witnesses, it's always easy to have witnesses see an event. It is extraordinarily difficult for witnesses to not see an event. Meaning, to come to court and to testify, hey, we never saw him buy property. And we never saw him sold property. I mean, quite frankly, that's going to require 724 surveillance of this individual by two witnesses. First and foremost, that's just creepy. Yeah. But I'm not glossing over this point of the Gemara. I'm understanding that it's a difficult point that the Gemara just made, but the Gemara made it. And again, we're just trying to come up with a scenario in which how can we know that the person doesn't have a vested interest? So now, admittedly, I know it's a little bit of a difficult point to accept, but what the Gemara now is suggesting is we know that he doesn't have a vested interest because there was no land, neither at the origination of the loan, or the witnesses are saying there was no land that was purchased even after the origination of the loan. The Gemara says, "V'amar Rav Papa afagav d'amar Rabbana mocher sadeh l'chaver shelo ba'achrayus uba b'chov v'tarfa eino chozer alav." So the Gemara says, okay, but I will point out the following, and that is a statement made by Rav Papa. Okay, let's say I sell a land without a chayus, okay, which has been the point under discussion. If I sell a land without a chayus, basically I'm saying to you, look, you're going to assume the risk. Here's my land. I do have creditors, okay, and I totally plan on paying back my creditors, but understand that I'm going to sell you this land, and there is a lien attached to this land, but you're going to buy this land, and you're not going to have any recourse against me. Okay? And you could do that. And, I mean, you could do that. Obviously, you're going to have to get a buyer who's willing to take that risk. But once he takes that risk, though, however, then the obvious point is that he can't come after you. That's the first statement to Rav Papa, and we knew that already. The second statement to Rav Papa, however, goes like this. Let's say I sold a property that was never mine to begin with. But I say to the buyer, look, it's a risky venture. I'm not going to share with you all the details of why it's a risky venture, but it's a risky venture. Okay? And then you sell the property. And he buys it with no recourse. Okay, fine. And then it comes out that you never were even the owner of the property. So under those circumstances, Rav Papa says, he can now come back at you and say, look, I understand that when I bought the property, so I took a chance. But here's some of the... I took some chances, which is, if a creditor comes and he takes the land, fine. Fine. I'll try to buy him out. I'll try to negotiate with him. Fine. But here's the chance I wasn't ready to take. I wasn't ready to take the chance that you sold me land that didn't belong to you. That chance I didn't take. Under such circumstances, Rav Papa says that now the buyer does have recourse. The buyer can go after the seller and say, look, you sold me something that didn't belong to you. You're going to pay me a full reimbursement, even if he buys it with the risk in hand. Fine. These two statements are Rav Papa. What the Gemara now is effectively asking is, wait one second. If we're going to subscribe to Rav Papa, so that means now that our seller does have a vested interest in that now we have a scenario in which the buyer is going to go after him, and therefore he is interested in testifying that no, the land belonged to me. I sold that which was mine, so that the buyer doesn't come after him for the recourse. So the Gemara now is basically asking, once you accept Rav Papa's viewpoint, so then he is going to have a personal interest and he is going to be Nogei Bedover. To which the Gemara says, so the Gemara makes the following suggestion, and that is that even though there was allegations that the donkey in question didn't belong to him, the Gemara says that we know the donkey belonged to him. Why? Because the donkey looks like somebody, like a donkey that came out of his flock. Okay, now I know I also smile when we talk about the identification of animals, and you know that animal belongs to you. Okay, again, I'm not on the farm. I've admitted that numerous times. So, but I just, in other words, the Gemara does work with an assumption that there are certain animals that are just simply recognizable. And the Gemara says that in this specific scenario that we're describing, we know that this donkey belonged to this individual. The Gemara has an expression which you're going to hear a second time later this morning, which is that it's bas chamor, a bas chamoro, meaning just, you look at the donkey, you know this donkey belongs to this particular family. So the Gemara says, if that's the assumption, so the Gemara says, then we know it belonged to him. So therefore, the allegation that the donkey did not belong to him and he sold something that did not belong to him is just simply false. And that's why, once again, we're back to the point where it was his, he did sell it, he sold it with no recourse, and under such circumstances, he's no longer a Nogei Bedover, and that's why he can testify about it.
It's not taken literally, that it's actually an offspring of
the
donkey.
No, it is taken literally, but the reason why we know it's the offspring is because it looks like its mother. It's a literal expression. It just simply means that we were able to recognize it.
If you steal a person's animal, you have to pay it back, twice the year, whatever. Here you're stealing somebody's land, and you're selling that land.
Right.
Isn't there some...
Well, I mean, let's go just one point further than the Gemara. Razvid Amar, it's gonna address your issue. I don't know if it's gonna make you happy, but it's gonna address your issue. Razvid Amar, afilin imse sheino shalom, eino chozer olav. Now, on this point of Rav Papa, which the Gemara asked the question, the Gemara points out that not everyone's in agreement with Rav Papa, notably Rav Zvid. Rav Zvid disagrees with Rav Papa. Rav Zvid says that when you sell a property with no recourse, meaning you're telling the person, look, it's a risk. You're buying the property from me, I may have creditors come and pull it away from you. There's a lien attached to it. And the guy says, fine. I'm telling you, under any circumstance, you can't come after me. The guy's like, okay, I get it. I'm ready to accept the risk. So Rav Papa says, if it turns out the property doesn't belong to you, so then he can go after you. Rav Zvid says that even if the property didn't turn out to be yours, he still can't go after you. Now, I know, right. The Amar Lei, Lahachi Zvinalach Shalom Bachrayus. And Razid's argument is, look, once I told you to assume the risk, so then there is a full assumption of risk. Included in that assumption of risk is going to be, even if the land didn't turn out to be mine. Okay, now, again, according to Razvid, it is a little bit challenging. Meaning, if the land didn't belong to him, then they had no right to sell it.
Where is the cost of the Mekachsalos?
No, but in other words, there is no Mekachsalos. He's basically telling you...
The land wasn't his to sell it. That's
Mekachsalos. I am limited in my understanding of Razvid. I'm putting it out there, but the basic idea is that assumption of risk means assumption of risk, meaning all risk, according to Rav Zvid.
So it could be a case where the property was in dispute.
Right. Right, exactly.
He knew he didn't have a clear title.
Right.
Doesn't mean he stole it.
My sense is that if it's a blatant theft, I mean it's just hard. I mean, what Ben is asking is, look, we're talking about a blatant theft, and then he turns around and sells it. Like, I can't imagine that the buyer's like, well, you know, I did assume the risk. He's right. I mean, he's not right. He stole the... I mean... David's suggestion over here is that, you know, the words, he had some claim of ownership.
It was not his.
I understand. It's a simple reading of Rav Zvid. I do understand that. Okay. All right. Okay, Gufa Amar Rav Bar Shmuel Mishmei Deshmuel. So the Gemara now is going to clarify a point which, quite frankly, we already said before, but we're just going to clarify it again. It's good. It's good. It's good review. So the Gemara starts off again with the statement of Rav Bar Shmuel in the name of Shmuel Mishmei Deshmuel. Now, this already was yesterday's daf, and this was the explanation of the Braisa, the second explanation of the Braisa, not the Rosh Hashanah explanation, but let's say it now over again. If I sell property over to my friend, and with no guarantee, so ain't made lo alaham im neisha mami de bifnei balchova. So you can't testify about it because you have a vested interest. And again, for the reason which we already articulated once this morning, because if in the event that you have a creditor and there's a lien attached to that land, so you want the creditor to exercise that lien because now you're going to be paying off your debt. So the Gemara says, hey chidami. The Gemara says, now let's think this through for just a moment. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. If you, the seller, have other properties that are free and clear in your possession, so then the creditor is not going to go after the mortgage property. The creditor is going to go after you. And as and the Rashman points out over here, and even if your property is inferior property, even if your property is Zibaris, the creditor is still going to go after you because we have a ironclad rule when it comes to the collection of debt, and that is that first you go after the you go after the borrower, and you go after any assets that he has on his possession, and then and only then when he has nothing left, then you go after the mortgage property. So the Gemara says, so if that's true, so then you are, if you have other properties, you're not nogeya bedavar. You don't have a vested interest because you're going to be satisfying the lender with the properties that you have in hand. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, now if you have no other property, so what difference does it make to you? The Gemara is setting itself up for the answer. We know the answer. We've heard the answer before. The Gemara says, you have no other properties. And what do you mean, what difference does it make to you? It makes a difference. Because you don't want to be in the category of a lover Russia, a wicked borrower who borrows money, doesn't pay back his loans. So the Pasuk in Tehillim is a strong condemnation for somebody who doesn't pay back his loans. So for me, it makes all the difference in the world. I know right now I sold the property, and I know I sold it without a guarantee. And I know that in the event that the creditor comes and takes it from him, nobody's coming after me. But still, I have a vested interest because I don't want to be a Rasha. So that's why I want the creditor to come and take the property away from the buyer. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, okay, but from your perspective to the buyer, aren't you a bad person? Mm-hmm. Meaning, what did you do to the buyer? Right. You sold something to the buyer. Now your creditor took it away from him. Your buyer's unhappy with you. So the Gemara says, okay, your buyer's unhappy with you. But you're not a Rasha there. Why not? The Gemara spells it out. Because when you sold it to the buyer, you said, look, this is a risky venture. You're going to be buying this with no guarantee. You don't have recourse on this property. I'm extraordinarily sorry, but that's how I sold it to you. I'm not. In fact, I'm not sorry. I was very upfront with you when I sold you this property. So even though, yes, it's true, the lokech is not going to be happy, but that doesn't reflect poorly on you. You were upfront with the individual. Okay, Adkan. That is the. It's not the end of the sugya, as you'll see. The end of the sugya really comes up in the two dots in just a moment. But that really, we could put like a put a mark over here in the Gemara. That ends the discussion of the Gemara in terms of the sale of property, the sale of movables, whether you have a vested interest after the sale. For property, you do. For movables, you don't. It has to do with the fact that for property, there's a lien. For movable, there's no lien. Okay. That's
you're saying that in this case, he doesn't have to pay back the buyer.
No, he sold right. Correct. He sold the below
no
price.
Obligation to pay back.
No, is there a dina shamayim?
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, he did sell it with the assumption of risk. Machriz Rava Vitema Rav Papa. So Rava made the following proclamation. Some say it was Rav Papa that made the proclamation. And they wanted this to be like a really public proclamation. So the Gemara here uses language which is very broad. The Silken Laelo, Danachna Latasa, those who are making Aliyah, those who are going down to Bavel. Meaning, I want everybody to hear this. I want everybody to know this. How about you sold the Zavon Lechamra Lishol? Let's say you sold the donkey to another Jew. One Jew sells a donkey to another Jew, and along comes a non-Jew, and he grabs the donkey, claiming that it belongs to him. And he grabs it from him, meaning he grabs it from the buyer. Now, just as a quick A quick preamble before we hear the public halakha. And that is that when you sell an item, so basically now, from the buyer's perspective, you say to the buyer, good luck. Meaning, it's your item now. It's your item, and any legalities, any legal issues that you have, you're going to have to fend for yourself. Okay. Generally speaking, once the buyer buys the item and once he has possession of the item, so he's got the item and he's got all the legal headaches that come along with the item, if there are any legal headaches that come along with the item. Generally speaking, the buck stops with the buyer. And from the seller's standpoint, okay, I'm out of the picture. What the Gemara now is telling us is that in certain occasions, under certain circumstances, the seller is going to have to get involved. It's his obligation to get involved. And that's what the Gemara now wants this to become publicly known. And that is, again, I'm going to start again. Hi, Bar Yisrael, the Zavanle, Chamer Yisrael, Chavre. If one Jew were to sell a donkey to his fellow Jew, V'ka'asi akam v'anis lemine, and along comes a non-Jew and grabs it from the buyer, Dino hu demavtzi lemine, you meaning the seller, should make it your business to retrieve the item on behalf of the buyer. You should get involved. Why should you get involved? So, the Rashbam. The Rashbam va'anislei, minei delokech, dekatani alkom chamor ze nignav mimeni, o mi shemachula gazo mimeni, uvelo edem ma'anso heimenu, kedem afarsh lekaman, meaning, and all this is done where the non-Jew had no witnesses. So in other words, the non-Jew is just simply making a claim. And he's saying, hey, it belongs to me. And the only thing he took was the donkey himself. And so therefore what the buyer should do, sorry, the seller should do, is the seller should make a move to retrieve the item. And Kamoa Potes, David Avdom, Echer Ra'ah, of course, the Pasuk in Tehillim, the word Potes means to retrieve. V'yavi Eidim v'yidon im ha'akom. And the Rashbam goes on to explain, and basically he should take the non-Jew to court, meaning the seller should take the non-Jew to court. And basically, if you do that, you have a chance now to get it out of the hands of the non-Jew. Now, specifically a non-Jew, not a Jew. Why? What's the difference? The Rashbam goes on to explain. Because, Ela yitmenu bedin, de'en koach li'Yisrael l'gzol chamor mechaver b'lo edem v'lo raya. You see, if it's a Jew that comes and takes it away from the buyer, so at that point in time, now he has recourse, but the way the Rashbam presents it is that the Jew who comes and grabs it wouldn't have done so illegally or illicitly. Meaning that he's only going to do so if he has proof and if he has witnesses. So basically now, it's a fair fight between the buyer and the Jew who grabs it. Masha Enkein, if the non-Jew comes and grabs it, so sometimes they just grab things, and therefore the non-Jew really does not have enough legal backing in order to do so, and so therefore it is part of the responsibility of the seller to help the buyer under those circumstances. Now, back to the Gemara. The velo amar nelo sheino makir bashi bas chamara ava makir bashi bas chamara lo. Now the Gemara says as follows. Now, let's say we know that this animal belonged to the seller, meaning that we know that the non-Jew who grabbed it literally does not have a legal leg to stand on. We know, and I mentioned earlier this morning, we're going to hear this expression twice today. Here's our second time, right? Shehi bas chamara, meaning we know that this animal belonged to the seller. So now, once we know that, so then the seller doesn't have to get involved in the sale anymore. Why? Because, look, the only reason why the seller has to get involved is because, look, you know, the Akum is going to grab things. That's what the Akum does. And generally speaking, we say to the buyer, look, if you can, you should fend for yourself. Meaning, normally, you need to fend for yourself. And the only reason why we have the seller getting involved is because, hey, you know what? The seller may not have belonged to him. Once we know it belonged to the seller, so from the seller's perspective, he did everything he needed to do. It's over. And now it becomes the buyer's responsibility to deal with the legalities. The The Gemara says, and we only said that the seller needs to get involved if he the non-Jew, were to take the donkey by itself. Why? So the Rashman goes on to explain over here. I'll say it outside. The Rashman goes on to explain over here. Because when the non-Jew is taking the donkey by itself, the non-Jew legitimately feels that, hey, that donkey belongs to me. And look, I'm not just grabbing things. Meaning, if I were just grabbing things, I would take the donkey, I would take the saddle. Meaning, whatever. He's being difficult. But by virtue of the fact that he's taking the donkey by itself, he really feels that it belongs to him. So now, once again, under those circumstances, now we're going to ask the seller, hey, can you intervene? But if the non-Jew is just grabbing things, he's grabbing the donkey, he's grabbing the saddle, so then we say to the seller, look, obviously, this is a legality issue that doesn't have to do with you, and it doesn't challenge your original ownership of the item. You don't have to get involved. Aval honestly, Amemar's of the position that, generally speaking, the seller doesn't need to get involved under any circumstance. Why? My time, mediyad destam avikochav emanosu shenemar asher pm dibershav v'minim yimin shaker. So the Gemara says, according to Amemar, the seller does not have to get involved under any circumstances. The only reason why a seller needs to get involved is because there is really a challenge to the fact that the seller owned it originally. And so if you need to clear up that legality, so then the seller should clear up that legality. But Amemar says that, generally speaking, if you have a non-Jew coming and grabbing it after the sale, there really is no legal question as to whether the seller owned it originally or not. The seller did own it. So once the seller did own it, and once he sold it, so basically now it becomes the buyer's responsibility. And any legal headache that ensues after that, that's the buyer's responsibility. And the seller does not have to get involved. So it's interesting. The Gemara started off the section with a statement by either Rav or Rav Papa that make sure everybody knows this. The seller needs to get involved in helping the Jew in the event that it was taken by a non-Jew. Amemar says, no, not really. Amemar says it's not necessary. Meaning this legality issue is an issue that is strictly the buyer's issue and not the seller's issue.
I mean, in this case, this Gemara is not really addressing the other issue of whether he can testify.
Right. Right. That's why I put a bookmark in the previous section.
And then the second question is, when he does come, what is he actually doing? Like, what do in a bank, there are people who make claims, and right, the people that testify.
Right, right.
There's nothing in between.
Right. The Rashman's language I quoted earlier was ulai. Like, in other words, maybe he'll get it back. Meaning, even if he gets involved,
what does he do to the process?
Just by being there, maybe he'll scare him off, and he'll call his bluff.
And then the last question I'm looking at is, if I buy something from you, and someone claims that you, or the other way around, that I stole it from somebody, right, I have to get involved because you have no understanding of where the chain of custody.
Correct.
Why wouldn't I be forced?
Well, that's what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is saying is that if what really is being called into question is your ownership of the original ownership of the item, well, that's why you have to get involved. Well, and that's what Amemar is saying. Amemar is saying is that since we have the general tendency of Akum being an anus, meaning that is their tendency where they take things that do not belong to them and they grab things that do not belong to them, so their seizure never reflects on your on challenge on your ownership. But I would agree with you, meaning if there was something that did challenge your original ownership, so then you would have to get involved.
But even in the case of Shmuel, like, I don't know where you got it from.
I hear that, but that's Amemar saying that this is not reflective of your. It does not call into question your ownership of the item. Okay, Adkan, that takes us to the end of the sugya. Now we go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah told us that certain people don't have a chazaka. The Mishnah gave us a list of people who, just by virtue of their occupation, so they're here on the property, or they're holding my item, but not because of a relationship of ownership, but simply because that's the nature. You have a sharecropper on my property for the last 10 years. He cannot claim after 10 years, hey, I'm the owner. You're a sharecropper. That's your job. Your job is to be on the property. And the Gemara says the same thing is true with an Uman. In fact, the first example the Mishnah gave was the Uman, was a craftsman. A craftsman is holding an item. So for him to then claim, hey, the item belongs to me, of course it doesn't. Meaning, by definition, you're a craftsman. People come over all the time, deposit items by you all the time for you to work on the item and then return the item. So your claim that it belongs to you is simply not a claim. You don't have a chazakah. That's what we learned back in the Mishnah. The Gemara is going to give us more details regarding the Uman. Umanin lo chazav v'chulei amarabah. Lo shna ela shemasar lo be'edim. This is true, says Rabbah, but only in the event, in the circumstance where you hand the item over to the Uman in front of two witnesses. Ava masar lo shelo be'edim. But let's say you hand the item over to the craftsman, and you did so without witnesses. You did so on trust and on faith. Mitoch sheyachol lomar lo. Lo hayu dvarim me'olam. So now, here's what the Uman could say. So what he could say is, what are you talking about? You're coming over to ask me for your watch that you gave to me in order to fix. What watch are you talking about? I barely even know you, and it never happened. You never came over. You deposited a watch. Now that's what he could say. Now I know on these. In other words, by the way, I should have mentioned this before. We are going to be migu heavy for the rest of today, and tomorrow. So now I know that this claim is simply not true. But he could have said it. And since he could have said that, so ki amar le nam lekuche biyadi mehaman. So when he says that the item is actually, I purchased the item, so therefore he's going to be believed, since he could have just simply said, lo hayudvar me'olam. Okay, now, amar le abaye yihachi afil be'edim nami. So Abaye says to Rabba, well, let's think this through. I'm sorry. Before I go to Abaye, Let me do this first. Okay. There are two big Rashbams. I know they're sizable, but there's a lot of good information that'll really help us throughout this discussion. The Rashbam Elisha Masolo Be'edim, right? The Rashbam is about 20 lines from the bottom. Balabais Uman Taliso Bifne Edim Lesakno. So the owner of the talis gives it to the Uman in front of two witnesses. Ve'ilka chafilu einanu roim achshav atalis biyana Uman or balabais tovo taliso. So once you give it, once you deposit it in front of two witnesses, so at that point in time, explains the Rashbam, you now can claim it back. And even if you don't currently see it in the garage of the craftsman, you can demand it. Now why? So the Rashbam explains, because Rabbah, as we will see later in the Gemara, is of the position that when you deposit something to the craftsman in front of witnesses, the only way he can rightfully return it back to you is in front of witnesses. Obviously, then that means that when the craftsman is ready to return it to you, he will have to wait until he gets two witnesses to return it to you. And the Rashbam goes on to say, it goes without saying that if we actually see the talis in the house of the Uman, according to Rabbah, so obviously he can't make the claim, well, I bought it. That's ridiculous. Meaning the witnesses saw that you handed it over to him, Bitaras Uman, as so that he could fix it. Okay. Umihu. Now, this part of the Rashbam is really interesting. Now, let's say the craftsman would make the following claim. Wow. Let's say the craftsman says, now again, this is all under the umbrella of Rabbah's position. The craftsman said back to the owner of the item, hey, here it is. Let me do that again. I gave it back to you, and I gave it back to you in front of witnesses. I just can't procure the witnesses right now. The witnesses right now are somewhere else. But I gave it back to you in front of witnesses. So the Rashbam says, under those circumstances, he's going to be believed. The Hachamim and Bishvus, and the Gemara says, and this is based on the Gemara Shmos. The Afilu Laman Damar Mavas Chaver Be'edim Sarach Lepar Be'edim Itan V'Amar Paratich Bifne Ploni Ploni V'Hal Chulahem LeMedinas Yam Ne'eman. Okay. Under such circumstances, you are going to be believed. So now the Rashbam is going to ask a wonderful question. So here now, according to Rabbah, when you hand it to the craftsman, you must do so in front of witnesses. When he returns it back to you, he must do so in front of witnesses. And he can make the claim that I did return it to you in front of witnesses. It's just right now the witnesses are not here. They're out of town. So that means then that even according to Rabbah, there is a claim that the Uman can make that will relieve himself from obligation. So once that's true, so the Rashbam now is going to ask a wonderful question. So that means now that he has a winning argument. Once he has a winning argument, so shouldn't he be extended credibility under any circumstance? Isn't that the whole point of Migu? Migu is there to tell us that Once you have a winning argument in your, you know, the once you have an ace card, so then you can throw out whatever card you want, and no, and you're going to be believed.
Huh? Migu does not hold up against witnesses. That's an excellent.
Well, the witnesses saw that he gave it. And then he can claim, I returned it with witnesses, and he's believed on that. That's the Gemara in Shavuos. So the Rashbam asks this very question. And the Rashbam goes on to write. It's the third wide line at the end of the line. Umiu, kol zman delo tana lech zartu lech shalo be'edim eino neman. And but if he doesn't claim that I returned it to you in front of witnesses, and he just simply says I returned it to you, he's not going to be believed. But however, we're not going to say amigu, even though he does have a winning argument. Why not? The Rashbam writes, the kevin de lo paru bifnei edim. The Rashbam writes, because your winning argument has to be a self-sustaining winning argument. Meaning, if the Migu is based on a claim that you could have made, but you could have made, and end of story. Here, if your claim is, hey, I returned it to you in front of witnesses, they're out of town right now. Okay, they're out of town right now. But eventually they're going to come back. And if and when they do come back, they're either going to support your claim, or they're going to refute your claim. Amigu cannot work under those circumstances. Meaning the backup claim of Amigu, says the Rashbam, has to be something which is self-sustaining. Which is just simply irrefutable.
Why is it amigo that he goes, I never got it from?
Because the guy gave it in front of witnesses. According, remember, this is Rabbah. Rabbah says that you have to give it in front of witnesses. So now at this point in time, we know, it's confirmed through witnesses, that he got it. Now the only way he can give it back is in front of witnesses. And he could claim that I did give you back in front of witnesses, but again, the Rashbam points out, and that would be a winning claim, but the Rashbam points out, we can't build a migu on that, because it's not a self-sustaining claim. Okay. That's an important point. And, moving on to the next Rashbam, Avamasar lo shelo be'edim. If you give it to him without witnesses, so lo mi behechadein ein anuro natalas biado demitoch shiach lomar emes atam asati liavahem echzati lach v'neman daha ein tzarech hashav lach zelo be'edim inam yach lomar lo hayedvar me'olam shalom asati li v'yeneman b'shvos hases ki amar lo nami yeshna biyadiv lakuchu shemachati li diyesh lachazak v'neman. I'm sorry, I read a lot. If let's say the guy gave it to the craftsman, not in front of witnesses, at that point the Oman, the craftsman, has the entire upper hand. If we don't see it on the possession of the craftsman, so then there's a whole line of arguments he can make. Notably, I already returned it to you. Notably, I never got it from you. So there, it goes without saying that the Oman in that situation has a lot of things he could say. But even if we actually saw the item on the possession of the craftsman, but it was not given to him in front of witnesses, but you can even say at this point in time where it wasn't given in front of witnesses, and you know that the item is there in the craftsman's house, he could just simply say, I bought it. Here, there's a whole bunch of things you could say, even if we know you have the item. Notably, you gave it to me, you sold it to me, I got it through a third party, meaning you sold it to him, he sold it to me, meaning once, according to Rabbah, it was not given in front of Edim, we don't know how it got from the original owner to the craftsman, and therefore the craftsman can make all these claims. Vuhu, So then when you say, you know what, you gave it to me, but you sold it to me, it's going to be believed. If you gave it with witnesses, according to Rabbah, so then the Uman is going to be stuck. And if you gave it without witnesses, so then the Uman is going to have a lot of winning arguments that he can make. Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Then what we're saying here, and the reason for all this, is that they did not use plane tickets?
In other words, again, evidence back then or two witnesses.
No, but I'm saying that they didn't use plane tickets.
From a halachic standpoint, validation comes, proof comes through witnesses. Meaning that's
so even if the person had a plane ticket, they would need witness.
Like a
stop. Yeah, right.
No, like a stop. Like
if, in other words, if you're saying by claim taking, you mean something which was signed by two witnesses. Right.
No. When you go take your shoes.
No, I understand. No, I understand. I totally understand. Right. In other words, then from a halachic standpoint, it's
nothing.
It's nothing.
If you go to the archaeological digs, there's no record of any dry cleaners.
Right. Right. Correct. Okay. Let's go a little bit further for this morning. So far, what do we have? We have the halacha of Rabbah. Mm-hmm. Rabbah says that whether you give it with Edim or whether you do not give it with in front of Edim, since he could say Lo Hayidvar Me'olam, so when he says Lekucha Biyadi, he's going to be believed. So Amalei Abayi Achi Afilu Beedim Nami Mitoch Shiachulam Lo Echzatilach Ki Amalei Lekucha Biyadi Meheman. So Abayi says to Rabbah, I don't understand. Well, if you give it in front of witnesses, can't the craftsman just simply say, I returned it to you? And so since he could say that, so isn't that now going to generate a migu? And since he could say, I returned it to you, so they can also say that I bought it? So Amalei Rabbah, Misvara. So Rabbah says, no, you misunderstood. My position is very clear. Rabbi says, look, I'm of the opinion that if what the item was given to the craftsman in front of witnesses, the only way the craftsman can legitimately say that he returned it is only if he did so in front of witnesses. Okay, so where do we stand right now in this debate between Rabbah and Abayi? Rabbah is of the position that when you give the item over to the craftsman in front of witnesses, so if the item is found on the possession of the craftsman, so the craftsman now no longer has a chazak on the item. He no longer can say, I own the item, I bought the item, lo hayidvar me'olam. Okay? And what about the argument where he could say, I returned it? Rabbah is of the position that when you hand it over to him with witnesses, the only way that he can return it is only in front of witnesses. Meisve Abayi is going to be challenging based on a braisa. Let's just quickly run through the braisa. Ra avdo biyad umen v'talesu biyad koveis. Let's say you see your slave in front of the craftsman. Well, you know, being held by the craftsman, or let's say you see the talis in the by the laundromat. Amrlo mativ atzachah, and I say to him, "What's he doing there?" Atamachateli, and he says to you, "What do you mean? You sold it to me." Atanasateli mematana. What do you mean? You gifted it to me. Lo amar klum. That is simply not a claim. You are a dry cleaner. You don't buy items from people. You take them to clean them. So that is just simply an illegitimate claim. However, if I point to somebody and I say, hey, right, you told them to sell it to me, you told them to gift it to me, so then, dvarv kayamim, well, then he's going to be believed. Now, even before Abaye gets to ask his question, the Gemara just wants to clarify that second half of the Braisa. What is going on in the second half of the Braisa? Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa. Amar Rabba Seifa Biyotze Mitachiz Yidei Acher. Rabba says, no, second half of the Braisa is not where the dry cleaner is holding the item, the actual third party is holding the item. Oh, that really makes all the difference in the world. The Karmalei, Acher, Bifanei Amarta Lola Mocha V'Leinim B'Matana. So, and now the third party is holding the item, and he's saying now to the original owner, well, you told the dry cleaner to go and sell it to me. That is an acceptable claim. Why? Because you had a better claim. The better claim is you sold it to me. Meaning, if I'm holding somebody's item and I'm not a dry cleaner, I'm not the woman, so remember, chazaka is 9/10 of the law. And the explanation, well, you could say that you sold it to me. So you are holding it, you have a taina, you have a reasonable explanation in terms of why you're owning it, so therefore it belongs to you. If you say, well, you told the dry cleaner to sell it to me, now in of itself, that's not such a great argument, but it's based on what you could have said, which is, you directly sold it to me. Anyway, we now would know what the second half of the price is talking about. Now, Reisha Ra'a. Now, in the first half of the Braisa, what are we describing? We're describing where you see the item being held by the craftsman, right? Your clothing is in the dry cleaner, and the dry cleaner is making the claim, hey, it belongs to me. And the Braisa says, inconsequential. Now, the Gemara says, now, if there were witnesses, so why do I need to see, to visually see the item by the dry cleaner? Just simply say, witnesses, did you see me hand it over to the dry cleaner? Witnesses will say yes. And then go ahead and take it back. Alalav deleka edim. So must be that there are no witnesses. V'chira'a mia tafisle. So there are no witnesses that saw me hand it over to the dry cleaner. My clothes is at the dry cleaner right now. And what am I allowed to do according to the Braisa? I'm allowed to take it. According to you, Rabbah, you're not allowed to take it. If I didn't hand it over to him in front of witnesses, so then I am not entitled to take it because he can make a number of claims according to Abaye, right? I bought it from a third party, right? All the things that we argued earlier this morning. So this Braisa would seem to indicate that Rabba's position is not an accepted position. That if I handed something over to the craftsman and I do not do so in front of witnesses, I am allowed to take it back. I'm entitled to take it back, and the Uman does not have a chazaka. The Gemara says, "Lo, la'olam de'ika edim." So the Gemara says, "No. When I handed it to him, I handed it to him in front of witnesses." Vehu de'ra'a, and that's what's meant when it says ra'ah. So the Gemara says, wait one second. Aren't you also the one who said that when handed in front of witnesses, it has to be returned in front of witnesses? Amrlei hadri bi. To which Rabbah says, yes, you're right. Originally, I did take that position, but then I recanted from that position. I was chozer. And I'm of the opinion that even if it was handed in front of witnesses, it does not need to be returned in front of witnesses. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll review.